Donald. Aloha. It's nice to be in Hawaii where it's humid and plants feel good, people not so much. Most of the work on this has been to understand the disease and the extent of it and the cause of it. And we have very little information on the control of it, which I'm sure we're all interested in, but that will have to wait for future seminars. So the disease in Southern California is in two different forms. One that occurs on the coast as ficus branch canker, and another that occurs as sooty canker disease in the desert. And we don't see either disease really occurring in the other place. The causal organisms are very similar with a few differences. The sooty branch canker has one causal agent, and the ficus branch disease has four or five, causing the same disease, either alone or together. So looking at the desert disease first, primarily a disease of the desert in areas like Palm Desert, Palm Springs, and Zaborrego, where it's really hot in the summer, like 120. And also moving out into Blythe, portions of Arizona and Las Vegas see this version of the disease on plants in the Moraceae in general. So we're talking about mulberry, ficus carica that might be growing in those areas, and other ficus. So we only see the anamorph, which is Neoscitalidium, and its related kind of syn anamorph, the Natrassia version. Mycologists do not have this well worked out. We have three or four names for the same organism, depending on the kind of spores that occur. So these are the abiotic spores, and we don't see the teleomorph, which is the perfect stage in situ. So we only see the asexual version of the disease. And the disease is deadly. It kills the whole tree eventually. This is a tree that Donald and I looked at last year. The disease is somewhat insidious. It can be in a tree like the one on the left, and the ones on the right show the progression of it, getting worse and worse over time until ultimately there's more dead wood than there is live wood and the tree expires. The sooty phase of the disease of sooty canker it occurs this way because of the development of arthrospores. And these are dark, melanized spores that are just the hyphae chopping themselves into individual bits and creating this spore load. And those spores can then be moved by wind, rain, if it ever occurs there, which it sometimes does, or perhaps pruning tools, but that's not been proven to be the case. Now, the ficus branch disease is our coastal disease, and this is one that started about 10 years ago. And at that time, ficus microcarpa was bomb-proof, bulletproof, and pest-proof. We had no or very few insects. The ficus thrips was, Cuban laurel thrips was about our only pest. And since that time, as Donald mentioned, we've gotten a number of pests. Ficus microcarpa seems to be the sick child of the ficus world in California. And it also seems to be the tree that always gets this disease. None of the other ficus species that we grow there seem to struggle with this disease, but here we have it. So it's Neofusococcum, pardon my typo, and the teleomorphs, which are Botryosphaeria, both being observed in situ. So we have both the perfect stage and the imperfect stage of the pathogen. And it's difficult to diagnose because ficus trees, if any of you have worked with them, they're covered in dirt and dust and soot, basically, of the urban lifestyle, and you can't see the fruiting bodies. So if you take a branch that's affected and you wash it off, then you can then visualize the canker that's occurring right here. That really isn't obvious in the unwashed condition. And so in that area, then, we'll begin to see the spores, which I'll talk to you about in a second. So this new disease in ficus microcarpa variety nidida is not just a canker of the phloem or the bark. It goes all the way through the wood. It completely colonizes branches, and it builds up an incredible biomass in the branches as it comes down through the tree. It is limited by the branch bark ridge here. As you can see, the pathogen is stopped right there by host defenses, but only for a time. And eventually, the pathogen can overwhelm those internal defenses and move further into deeper, larger branches and larger wood, eventually, as you saw in those photographs, colonizing the entire tree. So there are both Pycnidia and Parathesia that contain the anamorph and teleomorph stages of Botryosphaeria, or Neophysococcum parvum, or the other species mentioned. These were categorized by Mayorquin et al., of which Donald and I were a part of that, and which we verified five species of the Botryosphaeriaceae that can cause the disease, again, either separately or in concert with one another. And here you see a closer view of the fruiting bodies. They occur, as most Botryosphaeria do, on the already killed wood. So you don't see fruiting bodies on new tissue or newly killed tissue. It has to have died for a while, and then the fruiting bodies will form there. And as I said, this is usually covered in a thick layer of dust, so you might not necessarily notice it at first. And the spores are easily identified because the fusococcum or anamorph stages are free spores that are not contained inside of an ascus, and these are inside of an ascus, so that's the perfect stage, or the Botryosphaeria stage. We know that the disease spreads along boulevards, as you can see here in this picture from Santa Monica about 10 years ago. It's going down this way and along this way, and this tree is the least affected. And so we're hypothesizing that it's spread by pruning, but there's no researched evidence that pruning can spread the disease, nor is there any evidence or knowledge of a vector for the disease. Other members of the Botryosphaeria group and some related fungi do have vectors, beetle vectors and others that move the pathogens around. So it's spread by vectors is unknown. We think the disease is exacerbated by drought. And a curious thing is that the pathogens that have been identified and proven to cause the disease have been in California for as long as anyone has known. Botryosphaeria dothidia, Neophysococcum parvum, these are established resident fungi that have always been there. Why would they cause disease in ficus now? This is a really interesting question we don't really know the answer to. Most of the trees that we see affected are large. They don't seem to affect juvenile trees, yet proof of pathogenicity was done on young trees. So they will kill young trees. They will kill 1 gallon ficus trees and cause cankers in that tissue. But in the landscape, the disease seems to only occur on the older trees. So symptom onset is not well studied. We haven't seen a lot of the very early onset of the disease and what that looks like. We usually only notice it after it has become quite well advanced. The effect of irrigation is, I would say, fairly poorly understood, as are the effects of pruning cankered branches and the ability of that to stop the spread of the disease. We don't understand that either. So I guess I'm telling you a lot that we don't know. The little that we do know is that the Botryosphaeria group is involved. Those are the pathogens. It's fairly consistent that they are the ones we always isolate when we see this disease in Southern California. And you may sometimes see other things that look very similar. This looks just like this disease. You would not be able to tell driving down a road that this was a ficus branch canker or that it was actually a Ganoderma infestation. So we do have some pathogens like this, the putative Ganoderma lucidum. That name is going to change shortly, but what we know is Ganoderma lucidum does cause very similar symptomology. So what I think this offers us is an opportunity then to study the effect of stress on the development of disease, and this is where I want to take this in the next few months or years, because we have a nice system. We can infect seedling ficus with these pathogens easily. The disease system is It works very well. The canker lengths are all variable depending on the species of Botryosphaeria we use. We can pick an aggressive one if we really want to study the fast rate of development. And then we can look at things like salinity stress and drought stress and pruning and how that affects canker or lesion development. And that's somewhere where we're going to take this, I think. Thank you very much.